The Brad Sesmat Show, broadcasting live from the Horn Family Automotive Studios.
And on this Wednesday, greetings. Jeff Munn from the Arizona Diamondbacks in for Brad Sesmat today on Sports360AZ.com. Hopefully you've had a chance to check out our podcast, That's So Money. It's available once a week when I remember to record it. And we're here with you on this Wednesday, December 18th, a week to go before Christmas, with a lot going on in the sports world, and not all of it confined to just what's going on in football or basketball. We have baseball news as well, and we'll get to all of that over the course of this program. Derek Hall, president and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, will discuss what has been a busy couple of weeks and really a busy offseason for the D-backs that isn't over either, because if you think about it, they haven't crossed everything off their holiday shopping list. So we'll get with Derek and find out from him how he feels about how things are progressing, and we'll get to a lot of other subjects related to the D-backs as well. Michael Fabiano will be with us, NFL Network, NFL.com Fantasy Hall of Famer. We'll be on board for his weekly segment, and this is a big week because for a lot of fantasy leagues, this is the championship week. And as we'll mention this to Michael, and he'll point out, even if you're not in a championship week mode, a lot of leagues, you're still competing for runner-up trophies, consolation brackets, and that kind of stuff. So he'll have who to play, who to sit as we go into Week 16. By the way, and I failed to think of this until now, this is also a week where you don't have to submit a lineup tomorrow because there's no Thursday night game. The Thursday night games are done for this year. But we'll talk about who to play, who to sit with Michael Fabiano a little bit later on in our program. In the meantime, lots to get to in the world of sports and a lot of breaking news this morning. So we'll get right to it. What's going on in the world of sports is brought to you by Honda Resort and Casino, just 3 miles south of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. We have a special satellite link to Honda Casino right now where you can hear what's going on in the beautiful White Mountains. It's ski season. When you head up to Sunrise Ski Resort, make sure you stay at Honda. News this morning involving Arizona State and coaching, but it is not bad news. Yesterday, Todd Graham, and we'll get to Todd Graham in a moment, did have a lot to say about the rumors that have been percolating a little bit about the opening at the University of Texas. And we'll get to his comments in a minute. But also, there has been news that Mike Norvell, the outstanding offensive coordinator at Arizona State, had interviewed for the head coaching vacancy at Arkansas State. In response, Arizona State reacted and worked out a new contract for Mike Norvell. And as we said, I have, in the time that I got a chance a couple of weeks during the season to be around the ASU coaches, I was thoroughly impressed with Mike Norvell. I'm pretty much thoroughly impressed with everybody on that staff. But Mike Norvell in particular has proven to be an outstanding offensive coordinator, and I'll explain my position on why I feel that way in a second. But this morning, Arizona State announced that he has been given a new contract, a reworked contract, and a new title, deputy head coach. So that will no doubt keep him with Arizona State for the foreseeable future, and that is very good news. Now, as far as Todd Graham is concerned, obviously, as soon as Mack Brown announced he was stepping aside as Texas head coach, and despite the fact that there was a rumored agreement between Steve Patterson and Dr. Michael Crow that he would not, for lack of a better term, raid Arizona State for coaches to go with him to Texas, the rumors have been percolating that Todd Graham would be a candidate for the vacancy at Texas. Yesterday after practice, in preparation for the Holiday Bowl matchup with Texas Tech, Todd Graham said it's time to put those rumors to bed and bury those puppies.
One of the things I want to reiterate, too, because there's a lot of stuff out there, kind of getting tired of it. We are committed to be here to build a top five national power. I'm tired of, you know, I'm not talking to anybody, not going to talk to anybody. That's what we're doing. We're focused on that. And, we're putting together the top recruiting class in the league and doing some great things. And, obviously when you're doing those things, that's a lot of people don't think of anything but negative things to say. But the reality of that is just absolutely false.
And he's right. When these things come up and when a program's successful and they're out on the trail closing in on recruits, you're going to hear negative things pop up. And it's understandable that these rumors would pop up about Todd Graham. But kudos to him for squelching them immediately. And I think he does realize that he's on the cusp of doing something really big here at Arizona State. He is a very solid support from the fan base. He is well-liked by the media. He has accomplished great things in terms of changing the culture and obviously producing wins on the field. And I think he does. When he made that statement at the end of the Pac-12 championship game, we're just getting started, he's absolutely right. He's just getting started, and he realizes it. So it is good to see that Todd Graham has made this kind of commitment and stepped up and made certain that Mike Norvell isn't going anywhere. We'll talk more about ASU football later on in the show. Derek Hall is going to be with us to talk about the D-backs. And the D-backs on Monday acquired closer Addison Reed from the Chicago White Sox in a deal that sent Matt Davidson to Chicago. And I'll talk more about this in a minute. But Kevin Towers, in the moments or talking to the media after the trade went down, the obvious automatic assumption is that Reed is just going to be plugged in as the closer. And Kevin Towers mentioned very quickly, it's not an automatic just yet.
He's going to get every opportunity. Some of the guys that were here last year, and you know, we're going to go with the best guy when spring training ends and we start the season. If that is Addison Reed, he will be our closer.
Here's what's interesting to me about the reaction to these trades, not only the Addison Reed acquisition, but the Mark Trumbo deal. A lot of people, and Nick Pecoro today in The Republic, made mention of the fact that it seems that the Diamondbacks don't have a sense of direction with how they're putting their roster together. I just want to point out to all the critics of the moves that are being made, if the D-backs said, we're going with kids and we're going with prospects, you would be the same people turning around and saying Ken Kendrick and Derek Hall are cheap. So, you know, there's no pleasing you people. And I'm speaking specifically. I'm not talking about everybody. I'm just talking about the people who are quick to criticize Kevin Towers and the D-backs management anytime they make a move to improve the club. You say, well, they're trading away kids. The prospects like Tyler Skaggs and Adam Eaton and Matt Davidson, and how you could give up on these guys. Okay, let's go over it again. There is a perception that Tyler Skaggs, for whatever reason, is not going to be the type of pitcher, at least a top-of-the-rotation guy, that they had envisioned for him when they got him from the Angels 3 years ago. 3 years ago. Adam Eaton, there is a glut of outfielders in this organization. And they felt like they were comfortable with A.J. Pollock as a center fielder, and certainly he's going to be in competition for an outfield spot. Matt Davidson simply was not going to get the chance to play. With the acquisition of Trumbo, Martin Prado is solidly inserted as the third baseman, and it would not be fair to Davidson or the D-backs to send him back to AAA for another year of dominating AAA pitching, which he has already proven he's dominating already. There's nothing to be gained from that. So sending him to the White Sox to get a proven closer who will compete for the job, he's not automatically inserted yet, makes enormous sense. And on that subject, when we come back, Derek Hall, the D-backs president and CEO, will much more eloquently say everything I just said and a few other things on this Wednesday. Good to have you with us on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Hey, a reminder, simply sell it now. Sell people's cars, trucks, motorcycles, RVs, and boats. Let them sell your vehicle. No upfront costs, no hassle. Simply sell it now handles all the details, advertises and shows your vehicle, negotiates the price, closes the deal, and handles all the paperwork. SimplySellItNow.com. Jeff Munn from the Arizona Diamondbacks for Brad Sesmatt on this Wednesday. And on the subject of the D-backs, a lot of news being made. We say this line so often, but it's so true. There is no offseason, especially for our next guest, the president and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, Derek Hall. It's a rather ironic twist of life that I work for Derek Hall, but the only way I can ever talk to him is in radio talk show interviews. Hi,
hello,
boss.
Jeff.
How are you?
I'm good. No, you're right, though. There is no offseason. We call it our season without games, as you know. We're actually busier in the offseason, and of course, we're just a month or two away from getting going again.
Well, and there's been a lot of news made in the last couple of weeks, going back to the winter meetings last week in Orlando, and I know you've had a chance to get out your perspective on the Trumbo deal, and I want to give you a chance to talk about Addison Reed, but I am particularly, I said something in the last segment. There are a lot of people who have been critical, what a direction are the D-backs going, what are they doing? And I made the comment, if we were going the opposite way and saying, hey, we're not going to do anything, we're just going to play kids and hope it works out, these same critics would be up saying, you're not spending enough money.
Sure.
So I think it's important, first and foremost, to get out the message that, A, You guys do know what you're doing.
Well, in particular, our general manager. You know, Kevin Towers is one of the best in the business, and his relationships are so strong. And not only with his staff, but also with scouts around the league and those who he talks to every day. And listening to our folks in the winter meetings, you know, it's very clear, as we had said even before that, prior to that, Jeff, that we wanted to identify a power bat to put back in the lineup, somebody that would add more protection for Goldie, provide more pop, because we didn't have it. You know, although we scored a lot of runs, and I think we finished fourth in runs, you also have to realize, you know, we had a lot of extra inning games, and we were tacking on runs late when most weren't even playing. But we also wanted to identify a starting pitcher that we could have bolster our rotation. And we talked internally a lot at the winter meetings about the bullpen. So in starting with Trumbo first, you know, we've created depth in the last couple of years to the point where we knew we had pieces that we could move so that we can improve our ball club. We've said all along, we're not the type of team that's going to go out and make a huge free agent signing. We just can't do that. We can't compete with the LAs of the world. But we can get creative through trade, and in order to get something, you have to give something. And there are going to be critics who say, boy, how could you get rid of your depth, and why would you move such good prospects? Well, because we have a surplus, fortunately. You have to be careful not to empty the cupboard, which we're going to be very careful about, but also we have great faith in our scouting director, Ray Montgomery, who we think is the best in the business, and he's going to find more of those guys. We're going to continue to have that depth because he's hit right in every one of his picks so far.
You know, it's interesting you bring that up because the word surplus is really the key here, and I go back to Matt Davidson. There's simply no place for him to play with the Diamondbacks, and he has done everything he can do in the minor leagues.
Right.
So sending him back to AAA is actually counterproductive for him and for the organization.
That's exactly right. And in both cases, I take the Trumbo case first, Jeff, and we move two players. You hate to lose those players, but there was no guarantee that those guys were even going to be on our opening day roster. I mean, the consensus around the room was, A.J. Pollock proved that he's an everyday center fielder. He's only going to get better. He's a very smart player. He's probably the best defender we have. You know, the best arm we have is, of course, Parra, but he's probably the best outfield defender we have, and he can go get that ball. We know that. As far as Skaggs, you know, he up and down had trouble last year. He's going to be a great pitcher, but there's no guarantee he was going to be at the major league level either. So we needed somebody who was going to bring impact, and that's what Trumbo does, one of the top four power hitters in the game. And then, as you mentioned with Addison Reed, I mean, Davidson was blocked. And, you know, now that you have Trumbo out in left field every day, Prado's going to play third base. And with Prado playing third base, there's nowhere for Davidson to play. It does devalue him, either to sit the bench as a utility guy or as a, you know, late-inning bat off the bench. That doesn't do him any good. He's not developing as an infielder, as a third baseman. And going back down to AAA would not help him either. So this gives him a great opportunity where there wasn't one here. And our scouts internally really like Lamb and Drury in the future for that time when Prado maybe, you know, his contract's up and maybe gone. So we're in good shape there.
Finally, as it relates to the organization and the farm system, you talked about Ray Montgomery. I think it's important to point out as well, for people who are concerned about dealing away Skaggs and dealing away Holmberg, this upcoming draft in June is supposed to be very, number one, it's supposed to be loaded in terms of overall talent, but especially on the pitching side. There are some that are projecting that 18 of the first 30 picks in the June draft will go for pitching.
Yeah, it is talent rich, and for us to have the picks that we have and to have added the supplemental pick with the Ian Kennedy trade last year, we're in good shape. So you're exactly right. We're going to be able to find impact type arms in this next draft, and we feel like we had a great draft last year with Blair and with Shipley. I mean, they're still coming. And don't forget, we've got the best pitcher in all of minor league baseball in Archie Bradley knocking on the door. You know,
exactly.
He's going to be fighting for a spot in spring training. It's going to be hard to send him back down to the minors, even if it's for a month or two, but he's ready. I mean, he's proven at every level he's ready to pitch up here.
Derek Hall, President and CEO of the Arizona Diamondbacks, joining Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmat on this Wednesday, Sports AZ 360. No, it's sports360az.com. I always get it mixed up. Talking about starting pitching and what moves are left to be made, obviously the subject of Tanaka comes up. And I realize that we're still at an area where not much can be said. But let me pose a question to you this way. And I may be like the eighth person to ask this. But you led a contingent of D-backs executives to Japan in 2012. How much did that visit help open doors to make this a possibility?
I think it did quite a bit. I mean, we have a very good relationship with Tanaka's club and their executives, but more so, we're there. We have scouts on the ground all the time. You know, and since then, we identified a few players that we have interest in. I think every team has interest in Tanaka for good reason. I mean, he's probably the best free agent pitcher in the world right now, and he's going to be, you know, tops on everybody's list. But this is somebody that we've scouted for the last couple of years intensely, and, you know, for good reason. I mean, this guy is, you know, some say he's a slight step down from Darvish, but very close. We've seen what Yu has done for Texas. I mean, this is someone who can get into a rotation like ours and could be a number one for us, could be a number two in most, or a number one in most. And, you know, that's just how good he is. But our relationships, back to your question, are very strong in Japan, and it's important for us to have those relationships, not only there, but throughout the world as we're trying to spread our goodwill.
Well, and the reason for that, I would think, is that especially for his representatives, and again, we understand that there's certain areas we can't go down at this point, but for his representatives, or for representatives of a player from another country, familiarity with the organization and the major leagues they're dealing with is a really big priority.
It's very important, yeah. And for those players to come over here, it's a tough transition. They need to know that they can feel comfortable. You know, fortunately for myself, I've been through that experience with Hideo Nomo when I was with the Dodgers, and then Chan-ho Park from Korea when I was with the Dodgers. And, you know, I've seen that transition work. I've seen success. But they have to feel comfortable knowing that you're going to embrace them, that your culture will fit with theirs, that you'll bend the rules a little bit for them, because their practice, everything from stretching to eating habits to pitching on off days, you know, is different than ours. And we do have a knowledge and an understanding of that. So I think when it comes to international signings, you know, it's important that we let any of those players know this is a place where they can come and play. They're going to feel comfortable. Their families are going to feel comfortable. For example, Saito, who was here, and unfortunately he was injured during most of his stay, but he really enjoyed his time here. He happens to be a teammate of Tanaka. But when players ask someone like Saito, how was it in Arizona? And he says it was great. You know, best facilities, the staff is wonderful. That's very important, goes a long way. Not to mention, if you have the relationships with those clubs, when they're having conversations with the players as well, they can say, hey, look, you know, it's worked in L.A., you know, it's worked in New York and Boston. We can tell you Arizona's a team that really cares for our talent, our players, and to make you feel good as well.
This would also, I would think, stretch into, and obviously there are other reasons for your visits to Australia this offseason, but I would also think, given the growing market for baseball in Australia, it's going to follow along that more and more players out of Australia are going to be major league caliber players. And the fact that you're getting a chance to play these games and you've made these visits and you've gone and gotten familiar with the people down there, that too is going to have a payoff down the road.
Bingo. Yeah, there, and I would say in New Zealand as well, where baseball is just about to pass cricket in popularity, because folks over there have realized if their kids are going to get a United States education post-high school, it helps them to be playing a sport that they can get a scholarship in, and they know they can't get that through cricket or they can't get it through softball, because a lot of boys and men play softball in New Zealand, for example. So they're starting to play baseball, and the popularity has grown 90% in the last 2 years for those that are now playing baseball. Same with Australia. The sport is on a climb. It's on a rise. Us sending over Keon Broxton to play for the Blue Sox, he's an all-star already in their league. Fans love him. They've taken a great interest in the Diamondbacks. We've sold out those regular season games already in Sydney. They know we're the home team. You know, I've already been over there once along with Goldie. Patrick Corbin's been over there. I'm going back a week from Friday to do some more PR, just to let people know, you know, we're your hometown team. And really plant that flag, Jeff, because we want them to love the Diamondbacks. And as these kids play baseball, they're going to have an interest in the D-backs, having been there, caring about their community, caring about their country. And we need to take more trips. It's not just now, but it's going back and reiterating, we are your team. And when you're ready to sign with a team, come play in Arizona.
Derek Hall, the president and CEO of the Diamondbacks, joining us for a few moments on the Brad Sesmatch Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. In relation also, and I'm sure you've been asked about this as well, and I heard an interview this morning with one of our players about these two games. And I'm a bit bothered when people bring up the subject, will you guys be able to keep it civil? And, okay, number one, we understand there's a rivalry. We're all aware of it. But my knee-jerk reaction when I hear people ask these questions is, can you keep this civil and keep from, you know, having a brawl break out?
Sure.
I want to say, are we dealing with men here?
Right.
I mean, is Major League Baseball going to sit down and talk with both teams? I would like to think, and I know this from the perspective of working for the Diamondbacks, that those talks aren't going to be necessary. Both of these teams understand what can be accomplished in Australia. Does that mean that, you know, everything's going to be hunky-dory when we get back? That I don't know. But to me, and I know you agree, that both these organizations understand, play the games and don't even get into the other stuff, and they won't have to be told by Major League Baseball how to conduct themselves.
No, you're right. And these guys are professionals, and there is no love loss, that's for sure. I mean, these two teams do not like each other, and I think that's good. I think it's good for the rivalry. I think it's good for the sport. I think it's good for ratings and attendance and everything above. But, you know, we certainly don't condone violence or fighting or throwing it at anybody's head. I mean, that's not what we're going for here. And we want to win. Bottom line is we want to win those games. And it doesn't do you any good to get suspensions or ejections because they're going to be on the alert anyways. But I think if you ask either team, you know, they're going to say they don't like one another, but they're certainly not going in there with the mindset of let's brawl on the field. That doesn't make any sense. And will it get heated at times if someone gets brushed back? Sure. You know, do I think there's going to be some finger pointing or some chawing? Yeah, but I agree with you, Jeff. I mean, these guys are professionals, and we're certainly a class organization. We're not going to tell our players, you know, go head hunting. That's not who we are. We want to go down there, and we hopefully will walk away with two wins and start the regular season over here 2-0. Without any event and episode whatsoever.
Derek, I appreciate the time. Sorry I wasn't at the party Friday. I was on the road with my little basketball
I know
team.
You were. You missed a good one, Money, and we missed you, I'll tell you that.
So, well, we got a win in Fullerton, so if that makes it any better.
It does. Thank you.
Happy holidays.
You too, Jeff.
Talk to you soon.
All right.
Derek Hall, President and CEO of the D-backs, with us for a few moments. I forgot to mention, I'm going to do this very quickly before we get to a break. We do have a Facebook question today, and I'll talk more about this in a little bit later on. Today is the much-anticipated release of Anchorman 2. It's only fitting that we ask you, who is your favorite sports anchor, local or national? Head over to facebook.com/sports360az, like our page, share your input. I'll have an answer to that question in our next segment. Or maybe a little bit later on. Actually, what is coming up in our next segment? Oh, I know, Michael Fabiano.
Always read the show sheet.
Yeah,
that's why
so
I do it,
thank
money.
You, Eric. Yeah. So we better take a break because a lot of people need some answers to their fantasy questions, and we'll get to them right after this on the Brad Sesmatch Show.
Giving you fantasy football insight you can't get anywhere else. With NFL Network and NFL.com fantasy expert Michael Fabiano, here's Brad Sesmatch.
It's Wednesday. Time to talk with Michael Fabiano about fantasy football. Michael, of course, with NFL.com. And even if you're playing in a free league on NFL.com, and I hope you are because it's a great way to get introduced to fantasy football, this is playoff time, and for a lot of leagues, this is the championship week, I believe. Isn't it, Michael? Aren't we at championship week by now?
This is it. This is for all the marbles in fantasy football.
Now, and just for those who are not aware of how fantasy football works, a lot of leagues allow you as an owner to continue to compete against other teams, even if you're not in the playoffs. You don't have to sit out necessarily, correct?
Correct. On NFL.com, we have consolation rounds. So basically, you'll have your championship bracket and you'll have your consolation bracket. So if you've already been knocked out of your playoffs, it doesn't mean you can't still play. You can play up right through week 16, and if your league commissioner sets it up, you can go right through week 17 as well.
I'm very familiar with consolation rounds. That pretty much summed up my dating life in high school and college. But enough about me. We have a number of questions, and a ton of good questions came in this week, so we're going to get to as many of them as we can. Tom in Scottsdale starts us off, and he says, I need to pick one to fill my flex spot. Who's my best option? Le'Veon Bell?
You got it right.
Frank Gore or Keenan Allen? You'd know how much I've been following the NFL this year when I can't get that name right.
Three really good options, to be quite honest with you. Three very good options. Now, I typically like to go with the running back. I'm going to go with Le'Veon Bell. Frank Gore has a great matchup. Keenan Allen's playing the Raiders, so how much better does the matchup get? But Le'Veon Bell, to me, is a guy who's up and coming, and he's got a really good matchup against Green Bay. Go with the rookie.
Mike and Sholo ask, and by the way, I'm a Raider fan. Easy on that Raider talk.
Sorry. Well, hey, I'm a Cowboys fan, so I am not much better than you right now, my friend.
I'll tell you a quick story. I went with a friend of mine, and I don't really get to do this because I work in baseball, and it's like mid-October before I can actually sit and watch NFL games. I went with a buddy of mine to a sports bar to watch football Sunday, and I'm watching the Raiders and Chiefs, and I kept thinking, who are these guys? They're giving up 55 to the Chiefs. This isn't the Raiders.
And 51 fantasy points to Jamal Charles. That single-handedly knocked me out of my experts league because I had to play against him.
Yeah, I mean, it's just shocking. Mike and Sholo ask, hey, Michael, love your weekly segment with Brad on the show up here in Northern Arizona. Vernon Davis or Jason Witten in this weekend?
Boy, two very good tight ends. I'm going to go with Vernon Davis on this one. He's got a better matchup on Monday night playing against the Atlanta Falcons. Davis is the call, but Witten's a good start, too.
Alex in Surprise has a question. He says, I have both Aaron Rodgers and Phillip Rivers. Even if Green Bay activates Rodgers, is Rivers against Oakland still the better / smarter start?
What a conundrum this is going to be for fantasy owners if, in fact, Aaron Rodgers does come back. Phillip Rivers is playing the Raiders, though. And I apologize for taking a shot at your team, but this is a defense that gave up 7 touchdown passes to Nick Foles. They gave up 5 touchdowns to Jamal Charles. Last year against Doug Martin, they gave up over 50 fantasy points. I'm going with Phillip Rivers on this one.
Yeah, well, but you bring up a great point, and especially since for a lot of owners, they're into championship week.
Mm-hmm.
If they have Aaron Rodgers, to me, I think at this stage of the season, championship week, I don't think this is a time to be rolling the dice or taking chances. You go with the safe play, whether it's Phillip Rivers or somebody else, right?
It really depends on who your quarterback is, but you're right. 9 times out of 10, you're probably playing Aaron Rodgers, but there's so many good quarterbacks this season that you can start someone like a Nick Foles, who's been unbelievable, a Jay Cutler, a Phillip Rivers, someone like that. Now, I don't know if I would get cute and start Kirk Cousins, who I absolutely love, by the way, this week against my pathetic Cowboys, over in Aaron Rodgers. But there are some quarterbacks out there that were picked up on the waiver wire who I would start over Rodgers if he does, in fact, play this weekend.
Michael Fabiano, NFL.com. You see him on NFL Network, joins us here on the Brad Sesmatt Show, handling your fantasy football questions. Travis in Tempe writes, passing TDs in our league are worth 6 points. I have Tom Brady. Tannehill, Palmer, and Cutler are all available on waivers. Do I stick with Brady? My backup is Big Ben.
Wow. I am going to go start Jay Cutler. This is a really good matchup for the Philadelphia Eagles. And again, Tom Brady, hey, he's been great. He's been fantastic. The Ravens defense is tough. The Ravens defense is extremely tough, especially on their home field. This is a week that if I had an option who was legitimate, I would use that option to start over Tom Brady. Jay Cutler, if you look at his numbers, they've been fantastic. Outside of that one game where he was forced to leave because of the ankle, he's been fantastic this season. The Eagles just gave up 30 fantasy points or right in that ballpark to Matt Castle, of all people. Start Jay Cutler. Good matchup.
You know, you mentioned the Ravens, and there was a lot of chuckling over the kicker's comments at the end of the game in the live TV interview about the impact on fantasy.
Wasn't that great on fantasy? It was fantastic.
Yeah, and, you know, it brings up an interesting point. As we all know, in a lot of drafts, I would say probably all of them, the kickers are probably just, you know what, it's getting close to we're finishing up the draft. I just need a kicker. I'm going to take a kicker. But this is a position, even more so, I think, than defense and special teams, that has a real potential impact on your point total. And I'm a little surprised sometimes that when guys who draft kickers early in fantasy drafts get kidded about it.
Well, I'm not going to say that I'm going to be drafting kickers earlier than the last round still. The fact of the matter here is that kickers are so unpredictable that it's hard to pick someone outside of a Steven Gostkowski or a Matt Prater, someone like that, or even now a Steven Hauschka for the Seattle Seahawks, before the last round. Justin Tucker, he was great. I mean, you want to talk about a guy who helped a lot of fantasy owners, or hurt a lot of fantasy owners, depending on if you were playing him or playing against him. Dan Bailey's another guy, 22 fantasy points last week. That's phenomenal. And kickers have been making a bigger impact this year, but you're seeing guys like Nick Novak making an impact. You're seeing players like Alex Henry, like a Phil Dawson. These guys necessarily weren't drafted. There's so many good kickers out there, and it's so hard to predict, again, outside of the elite, if there are, quote, elite kickers out there, and certainly there are in fantasy. I still would wait until the last round to pick these guys. I don't think that's ever going to change. But you're right. The kicker position has made a major impact this season.
Well, I agree with you that you don't waste an early pick when there are still running backs and quarterbacks and receivers sitting out there.
Sure.
But here's an interesting thought. And I heard this mentioned in a radio interview earlier this week, given the game winner Monday night in Detroit. You should, I guess, if you're a fantasy owner, put some thought into kickers in the last round in this respect. We are in a day and age where a lot of games are played indoors. There are a couple of teams that play at altitude, Denver specifically. And given that there are bonus points awarded for the length of the field goal, I would think you would want to put some thought into, hey, look, if Denver's kicker's sitting out there, or a kicker for a team that plays half their games indoors, that's the kind of guy I want over just any kicker, because this guy's got a chance to get more bonus points.
Oh, certainly there's more to that. There's no doubt about that. When you get a guy who's indoors, when you get a guy like a Matt Prater who's playing eight of his games in Denver and breaking NFL records for the longest field goal, which he did earlier this season. But again, you're still not going to be taking that kicker until the later stages of your fantasy football draft, because I can argue right now, and if you take a look at some of the leaders at the kicker position, you've got a lot of guys there who weren't even drafted. You're talking about guys like Mason Crosby, who had a bad year last year. A lot of people were off of him. Nick Novak. Adam Vinatieri hasn't been that great of a fantasy kicker lately. He's been really good this season. Nick Folk is in the top 15. So, point taken, no question about it, but I'm still waiting until the later stages to draft that kicker.
Oh, no question. And yes, we just did spend 2 minutes talking about kickers.
We did.
So
we have to wake up the audience
here now. I brought that up that way. Michael Fabiano from NFL.com, the NFL Network, joining us on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Craig in Goodyear writes, have to start two, Jordy Nelson, Edelman, T.Y. Hilton. He's obviously asking you to pick two of the three.
Yeah, and I'm going to bench Hilton, even though the Chiefs' defense has not been good against the pass over the last few weeks. Nelson, especially if Rodgers is back, is a very, very nice play. And Edelman, if you look at the numbers this kid's putting up over the last several weeks, I mean, he's been phenomenal. He is the most targeted wide receiver there in New England, and a guy who now has a whole lot of fantasy value. And if you can believe it, in the last 4 weeks in a PPR league, Julian Edelman has scored the second most fantasy points among wide receivers.
Wow.
He's got 12 more points than Alshon Jeffrey. He's got more points than Antonio Brown, Eric Decker, Larry Fitzgerald. I mean, the list goes on. This guy has been very, very good if you're talking about PPR leagues. And even in standard leagues, if you look at his numbers there, pretty impressive over the last 4 weeks or so. He's third in standard leagues.
Bob in Phoenix writes, somehow I've made it all the way to the finals, even with Ray Rice, who has struggled but still has breakout ability. In the finals, as a general rule, is it best to stick with him or play the matchups?
That really depends on your alternatives. And I'll give you an example. Ray Rice this week is playing against New England. Their defense has not been good against the run lately. And nine times out of ten, yeah, you're probably sticking with that guy because he's a number one. He drafted him in the first round, and maybe your alternatives aren't that good. But what if you picked up a Zach Stacy off of the waiver wire? What if Eddie Lacy was a guy you drafted in the fifth or sixth round? What if Noshon Marino was someone you were able to pick up later in your draft? The same with Ryan Matthews. In that case, I'm benching Ray Rice. But if your alternatives in your backfield are not as attractive, well, then Ray Rice is going to be in your starting lineup.
That's an interesting point, and I've been in fantasy leagues where I've gotten to the championship round, won once, lost the other time. But in general, owners, is it the general rule of thumb that you try to approach the week the same way you do every other week and not try to, okay, all of a sudden I'm going to do things differently because this is for the championship and it's a one and out kind of deal?
Sure. What got you there? What was your strategy that clearly was successful that helped you get to the finals? Don't get cute. That's what we like to say on NFL Fantasy Life. Don't get cute with what you're doing because it's for the championship. Again, nine times out of ten, you're going to stick with your studs. You don't want to fool around with that. Unless, again, it's a Tom Brady and you can pick up someone like a Jay Cutler, which in a lot of leagues, Jay Cutler's available because, remember, he had missed so much time. But most of the time, you're not going to be able to pick up someone off the waiver wire at this point of the year that's going to be good enough to play ahead of a superstar player. So stick with your studs. The way that I approach it is the coaches around the National Football League are not benching their superstars, and you probably shouldn't either, again, unless you're in one of those stages where you have the luxury of being able to pick someone up who has a really good matchup, but who has also been productive.
Michael Fabiano, NFL.com, NFL Network, joining us for our weekly fantasy football segment here on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. Got about 90 seconds. Mm-hmm. You mentioned the waiver wire, and like any other week, owners will, even the ones who are playing for championships, they're going to look at the waiver wire to
no
see
doubt.
Who's available. Are there hot names in general that you're seeing get picked up off waiver wires in various leagues heading into this week?
Jay Cutler, Kirk Cousins, Jordan Todman, Doug Baldwin, Dennis Pitta. These are some very popular names and names that you can pick up and start this week. And typically in week 16, you're not picking up players who you're going to start. But I'll tell you right now, with those guys, I'll give you a little bit of advice. If you have very little faith in your quarterback, if you've been streaming quarterbacks and you still made it to the finals, and you can pick up Kirk Cousins or Jay Cutler, I'd start him. I don't care that Cousins has been a backup. The Cowboys are awful. Awful. They've been getting beaten up by backup quarterbacks all season long. Matt Flynn looked like Aaron Rodgers last week. This is a guy who had been cut by the Seahawks, by the Raiders, by the Bills. Nobody wanted him. He goes to Dallas, and he scores 30 fantasy points. Cowboys are that bad. So don't be afraid to pick up a guy like a Cutler, like a Cousins, even like a Pitta if you need a tight end, and start him. And if Maurice Jones-Drew isn't playing this week, Jordan Todman's got a great matchup against Tennessee. So don't be afraid to start those guys. But again, 9 times out of 10, you're sticking with your big names.
Well, it's going to be a fun week, especially for the owners that are involved in championship games. And it's going to be very difficult for them to concentrate on things like decorating the house and going out shopping for presents. But this is it, championship week. Michael, I appreciate the time. Everybody can check up on the latest advice from you on NFL.com, and you're on the NFL Network. And I thank you for joining us today.
It's always a pleasure. Take care. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas as well.
Same to you. Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. Michael Fabiano joining us for our weekly segment on fantasy football. And we're back with more of the Brad Sesmatt Show after a break. Jeff Munn for Brad Sesmatt on this Wednesday, Sports360AZ.com. We will have an updated podcast, That's So Money, very original title. That we will record later today, if all things work the way they're supposed to. Very quickly, we've gone through this entire show and we haven't said the word Cardinals, which is odd because it's football season and the game Sunday is rather huge. But I think at this point, it's really, I know a lot of people are saying nobody expects the Cardinals to go to Seattle and beat the Seahawks. But you know how it is with these teams of destiny. They go and they do things that you're not supposed to do. So I wouldn't necessarily write it off completely. This will be a very interesting football game, to say the least, and it will not be 58-0. That much I'm certain of.
I'm going to ask you something we
yes.
chit-chat about the other day. It was a Facebook question. I'm curious to get your opinion, Jeff. If the Cardinals do not make the playoffs, and they are right now guaranteed of only their fourth winning season since coming to the Valley, is it still a success?
Yes, because I don't think anybody would have expected double-digit wins. I don't think anybody would have expected a winning record. I didn't. I'm still kind of lukewarm about Bruce Arians, only in the sense that I just haven't seen, and I'm not a football expert, but I have not seen the impact he specifically has had on this team yet. I think the impact that he's had has been more in terms of culture than it is in terms of the roster, the scheme, the philosophy.
Right.
He's very much a blunt guy, doesn't hesitate to, I don't want to say throw players under a bus, but he doesn't suffer excuses very well. Doesn't like making an excuse of the officiating, doesn't like making an excuse about playing on the East Coast at 11 a.m. Phoenix time or the weather was bad. He just says you got to go out and play. I do appreciate that from him, but I think it's too soon even now to judge whether or not he's had the kind of impact. But I say that, and at the same time, if they do make the playoffs,
phenomenal year.
He's pretty good candidate for coach of the year.
Yeah, I'd pretty much agree with you. But the ultimate goal for any coach, for any team, for any of the players is to win a Super Bowl. And
right.
if you fall short of even making the playoffs, you don't even give yourself a chance to get to the Super Bowl. And remember, the Cardinals, when they went to the Super Bowl, they were such a long shot. Chris Collinsworth
right.
called them the worst playoff team in NFL history. And then they rattled off three straight wins and almost beat the Steelers. So you get there, anything's possible.
Absolutely. Now, Facebook question. Today is the much-anticipated release of Anchorman 2, and it's anticipated because Will Ferrell is on every television screen in America as Ron Burgundy. It's only fitting we ask you, who is your favorite sports anchor, local or national? That's going to lead me into an editorial. So before I give my answer, what's yours, Eric Sorensen?
I'd have to say John Anderson. I always liked him when he was at Channel 5, and he is not the too much over-the-top sports center anchor, but he's still witty. He's sort of like a poor man's Keith Olbermann in a way. So.
If we're going to include that, I would have to say my number one choice nationally, and he's not really a quote-unquote anchor, but Keith Olbermann.
I enjoy
his show.
He's great.
And he is very articulate, erudite, all those things that I appreciate in an anchor. Now, let me just editorialize this to a certain degree. It's really hard for me to judge the local TV anchors on sports for this reason. TV stations, and I'm not, again, before anybody at the TV stations calls and complains, I am not being critical of you. But a decision has been made in the last several years to cut down the amount of time devoted to sports. And I get it. There's ESPN, there's Fox Sports Net. You know, they're just, and mostly it's women that watch local newscasts. So why are you doing sports if women who generally don't gravitate to sports are watching these programs? So I don't think it's terribly fair to judge Tim Ring I'm sorry about this. I don't know who the main sports anchor at 5 is. Is it Mark McClune? Okay. And he's a nice guy, and he's a guy
Joe
that
Pequeno
I know.
Joe Pequeno as well is over there.
Joe Pequeno's over there. Jude, Gail, Richard at Channel 10. Fui and Calvisi at 15. I think those are the only two. And Tim Ring, I mentioned Tim Ring, and I think it's Tyler Bassett at 3. And I'm leaving somebody out. 12.
Tyler Baldwin.
Who's Tyler Bassett? Oh, he works in another station. Sorry.
Correct.
Sorry about that. This shows you how much I watch Channel 3. And Channel 12, Coop, and fill in the blank. I don't know who else is on with Coop.
Probably Dan Bickley.
Yeah, and isn't that interesting? Dan Bickley's a TV anchor now?
Kind of. I don't know.
Wow. It's not fair to judge these people because they just don't get enough time. And I'm not being critical of the TV stations. They found that mostly women watch the television news and they devote it to news and weather. Okay, fine. I have no problem with that. But because of that, I really can't fairly evaluate the people at the TV stations. It's just not fair because they get 90 seconds. You know, how much impact can you make in 90 seconds? The answer? El Zippo. I mean, you just can't.
And Jude is sort of the elder statesman. And
oh,
no
he'll
shot
like
at
that
Jude,
title.
But, yeah, I mean, he's been around the longest.
He has been around the longest.
He's the Wiley TV veteran.
Yeah,
here in the
he is. And
probably,
you know what's interesting
and honestly,
about
probably
that?
The most well-respected.
You and I both worked with him at another location.
Yep.
And when he made the move to TV, we thought, this guy doesn't know anything about television. And now he's become the Wiley TV veteran. And you know what? The reason he is the modern day, and I hate to do this because it's going to exclude a whole lot of people listening to this. He's the modern day Bill Denny. Bill Denny was a guy on television for a number of years here in Phoenix, the leading TV sports anchor. And part of his appeal, the major part of his appeal, was the ability. You felt like you could sit down and have a beer with this guy. And Jude has that same quality. And that's what makes him so successful as a local TV sports anchor. Is the feeling like you can watch the guy and say, hey, he's just like me. I could sit and talk sports with him. I will also tell you this. I watched Channel 12 last night, and I admit, I rarely watch television news, and I don't know why I was watching Channel 12 last night. But their 10 o'clock show, and I really don't, again, I'm not doing this to anger Mark Curtis or Lynn Sue Cooney, but their lead story last night was who won The Voice. And Lynn Sue came on and said, Channel 12, the only Phoenix TV station to be at the Voice performance. Duh, it's an NBC show. Sure, Channel 10 should go cover it. Just like Channel 12 should go cover the finals of American Idol. Der-doing. But it was really interesting. First of all, I get it. I mean, you got to go with what people are interested in. And some people in journalism would be really offended at you led with the finals of The Voice. Well, it's what people are talking about. The other thing that was interesting about it, they had sent Emma Jade, who I don't know from The Man in the Moon. I've never met Emma Jade. I've seen her on television. Nice lady. They sent her to L.A. I assume it was in L.A. to cover the finals of The Voice. And they went to her on a live shot. And just as they came on to her on camera, she had a very perturbed, borderline angry look on her face. And she was waving her hand at the camera and mouthing some words I don't think you're allowed to say on any broadcast medium. And for the balance of the live shot, she had the two hosts, Carson Daly and some other guy I don't recognize. And for the balance of this interview, she was apologizing to her husband because this guy behind her claimed that she kissed him before they came on camera. And the only reason I continued to watch was, I think we're about to have a meltdown moment. But it never really occurred that way. But, yeah, Channel 12 is the only station that covered The Voice. Are you sure?
Wow.
You sure 3 wasn't there? It is an NBC show.
If all the 10 o'clock newscasts had that much drama, maybe I'd watch more.
So. I just, you know what, and we're in the media. So there isn't as much appeal to us in the media to watch television news. And this is not a knock on the electronic journalists in this town. I have great respect for all of them. But it's a very hard watch. There's a guy trying to bring flowers in here, and he wants to walk in. Seriously, he's looking at the door, and he was contemplating walking in on me, which I think was hilarious. Anyway, and again, Mark, Lin Su, I love and respect you both. Please don't call. This isn't about you. Somebody else above you decided to leave with The Voice. I get it. Okay. What we got coming up? All kinds of things on this Wednesday. I hope you're having a really good day. Stay with us. Sports360AZ.com. New podcast later. That's so money.